This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Oren McIntyre. I wanted to talk to you today about the importance of books, the literary Western canon. It's not something that we often discuss. It's not something that people even think about very much anymore. We're fighting for a civilization. We're fighting the current political battle. But we rarely remember the importance of creating the cultural continuity that gives us something worth fighting for. We're always focused on the current issue, the current drama. And I get it, of course. I'm somebody who talks a lot about the importance of political power and taking action and all of these things. But the cultural preservation necessary to give us a connection to the traditions that are worth fighting for is essential, and that's really what the canon is all about. At the end of the day, we are narrative creatures. Humans don't just walk around with a bunch of facts and logic, and that's how they communicate at every moment. Everyone's not this hyper-rational individual that we so often want to pretend that we are. In many ways, we are constantly living out the stories, inhabiting the archetypes and the characters that we're familiar with. When we have discussions, when we have exchanges, we're doing that in a very symbolic manner. And so I wanted to focus today on the importance of that tradition, because if we're not understanding that, if we're not reading these classics, if we're not sharing them with those that we care about, if we're not creating a context in which they are part of our language and our culture, then we can have all the political battles we want. We can even win all the political battles we want, but we won't have anything meaningful and substantive to go ahead and pour all of those victories into. And I think that's a really critical thing that we need to focus on as we try to figure out what we're fighting for. So I'm going to dive into all of that, guys. But before I do, let me tell you a little bit about today's sponsor, ISI. Universities today aren't just neglecting real education, they're actively undermining it, and we can't let them get away with it. America was made for an educated and engaged citizenry. The Intercollegiate Studies Institute is here to help. ISI offers programs and opportunities for conservative students across the country. ISI understands that conservatives and right-of-center students feel isolated on college campuses and that you're often fighting for your own reputation, dignity, and future. Through ISI, you can learn about what Russell Kirk called the permanent things, the philosophical and political teachings that shaped and made Western civilization great. ISI offers many opportunities to jumpstart your career. They have fellowships at some of the nation's top conservative publications like National Review, The American Conservative, and The College Thinker. If you're a graduate student, ISI offers funding opportunities to sponsor the next great generation of college professors. Through ISI, you can work with conservative thinkers who are making a difference. Thinkers like Chris Rufo, who currently has an ISI researcher helping him with his book. But perhaps most importantly, ISI offers college students a community of people that can help them grow. If you're a college student, ISI can help you start a student organization or a student newspaper or meet other like-minded students at their various conferences and events. ISI is here to educate the next generation of great Americans. To learn more, go to ISI.org. That's ISI.org. All right, so the first thing we should probably do when we're talking about the literary canon, the Western canon, is explain what that is, because many people might not be familiar with that concept. So every culture is going to have a set of stories, a set of books that form the foundation of who they are as a people. They're the common literature that everyone is familiar with. Everybody in the nation, everybody who's a part of the culture, has some awareness of these works, and these works serve as a language which they use to talk to each other. It's not just the words, obviously, it's not just the sounds or the shapes that you write on a paper that make a language. Of course, it's the ideas that are captured in that. And those things have to come from a shared experience. And you can't really have a shared experience outside your immediate community without some kind of shared literature, some stories that everyone understands, everyone can draw archetypes from. Because again, we are narrative creatures. We are not people who just communicate raw facts on a regular basis. And so who are some of the people, or what are some of the books that would make up this Western canon? Well, I think we can go all the way back to the works of maybe the ancient Greeks. We can look at things like the works of Homer, the Iliad and the Odyssey, Plato and Aristotle. These are going to be people, things that people make references to often. And this is really important when we talk about the canon. Often people are making references to these things even when they don't know this about themselves. They don't understand. They might say something about a Cyclops or the Sirens. They might say something about the Achilles or these kind of things. They might even not know the stories that they're talking about, but they're still speaking in allusions to these works. They echo through all of your conversations and all of your back and forths, even if you're not particularly aware of them. Of course, I think the core book that's going to be key to the Western canon will be the King James Bible. Now, other translations of the Bible, I'm not saying that they're not valid or they don't have value. I'm not saying that the King James translation is the most faithful in every single situation. But the King James Bible is the one that all of these other classic works pull from. So it's kind of the bedrock of the canon. When we talk about the works of Shakespeare or Milton or Dante, who are all going to be part of the canon as well, they are themselves completely unable to be understood without the context of the Bible, very specifically the King James Bible. This is actually a huge problem now when you try to teach these works. As someone who was a teacher, I'm very familiar with this. When you try to teach these common concepts, these cultural concepts to children today, they can't grasp these works because they don't know the foundation of the works. They can't grasp Shakespeare, not just because they have a difficult time reading something of that complexity, but because they don't have the biblical references that are constantly made by Shakespeare throughout his work. They don't even know often the stories of David and Goliath, or, you know, the birth of Jesus, much less, you know, more kind of more in-depth references, something to, I don't know, Daniel, or they don't know Daniel in the lion's den. Like, they don't know a lot of these basic stories that you think you could easily, Jonah, you could just make allusions to, Moses. You assume that people just understand these things, but if you're not familiar with the biblical text, then you're not going to be able to draw on it when those things are put into, say, something like Shakespeare. And again, I'm sorry, the language of the King James Bible is echoed through all of those things. So the specific scriptural references that are echoed over and over again in those works are going to be very specifically the King James Bible. Though again, that doesn't mean it's the one I prefer to read, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other translations that are valuable. It just means that is the one that was the core text for so many other great works that are critical to the canon. Again, like I said, you're also going to want to look at Shakespeare. You're going to want to look at Dante. Obviously, Milton and Paradise Lost are going to be critical. Guys like Dickens, Mark Twain, Alexander Dumas, all of these are going to be absolutely critical to the canon. And again, this creates this shared language when people make a reference to the white whale in Moby Dick, or they make a reference to something that takes place in a Dickensian novel, or the painting of the fence in Tom Sawyer. Like, these are all references that, even if as a child, right, I would watch a Bugs Bunny cartoon, I would watch a Looney Tunes cartoon, and he would make the speech from Julius Caesar about, lend me your ears, fellow Romans. And I didn't know that's where that was from. I was completely unfamiliar with the play Julius Caesar. I hadn't read any Shakespeare at age 8. Bugs Bunny is sitting there in a toga holding an ear of corn. Lend me your ears, right? I didn't get that joke other than Bugs Bunny just looked funny. But later on, when I, of course, became aware of these things and eventually read that work, it was a completion of my culture, right? Even though this was just a silly kids cartoon, the fact that it alluded back to far more serious and important works that were culture that had a great cultural impact meant that there's a wholeness that you find when you work your way through your life, because the canon has woven its way through everything that you consume, from the smallest, you know, thing given to a child to amuse them, all the way up to rich works that, you know, inform the human condition. All of them are making a constant call back to these things. Now, you notice that some of those works go all the way back to the Greeks. Some of them are part of, you know, a medieval tradition. They could work their way up to Elizabethan England. And of course, over time, this means that your canon is going to expand. To be clear, the canon isn't just some constant fixed thing. It's not just this set of books that you absolutely have to have read all the time, and there's never anything that gets added. Over time, you have to go ahead and start putting things in there. I mean, at some point, you think that somebody like Tolkien will probably become part of the canon due to the massive work impact of his literary work. It probably is a little too early for that yet, but I would say he's a really good candidate down the road to be added. And, you know, at some point, some of this could start falling away. You look at maybe something like Chaucer, Canterbury Tales, probably doesn't have the cultural impact and relevance to at this point that it used to have. So it's not like there has to be a static version of the canon. Any good tradition is ultimately a living tradition, and things can and must be added to the canon over time once you recognize their impact. Also, it's important to realize that the canon is not something to necessarily always be completed. Let's be really honest. The average person is not going to read every work of classic literature. That's just not a reasonable thing to expect the average person to do. The point of the canon isn't to create this definitive body that every single person has to read at any given moment. The point of it is to recognize a central core of texts that inform the way that we talk to each other. And this is really important because, again, I worked as a teacher, and unfortunately, I worked in some areas where, you know, the population was very new, heavily immigrant. Many of the children are entirely unconnected to kind of the traditions that are core to the Western idea. And especially a lot of them were unchurched. They were completely unfamiliar with the Bible, completely unfamiliar with all references to Christianity. I know a lot of people think that we need to go to Africa. We got to send that. And look, of course, there's always going to be missionaries. The Bible is clear that there should be. But a lot of people are really focused on sending, you know, their church members half a world away and sending all of their money and attention and prayer to people, you know, many, many, many countries removed from them. Why the kid down the street has no clue about Jesus, has no idea, you know, who any of the people in the Bible are, could not make could not understand allusions to any of the events in there. Now, I'm a Christian, and I think that that's a horrific thing just because everyone should come to Christ. Christ is King, Christ is Lord, He's the Savior. It will change your life, and you should do that. But on top of that, it's a travesty because these stories are key to our identity. It's just, it's not, and this is what was one of the horrible things about stripping out biblical education from a public school, which absolutely belongs there, by the way. It has to be there. By stripping that out, by making it some kind of anathema to have a biblical education in there, you didn't just destroy people's religious understanding, which would in and of itself be a terrible crime. You destroyed their cultural understanding as well. The kids don't know any of these things. They have no shared language, no way to understand the type of passages that they're supposed to read. There's a reason that, you know, before we had this kind of current, terrible, modern education system, most people just learned in school by reading a couple texts. You read your Bible, you know, maybe you learned Latin by reading, I don't know, Cicero. There are only a few, there's a handful of books that everyone read, and that's how you learned things. And the fact that everyone had to learn them, you weren't trying to read passages from every culture across the world. You weren't trying to make sure that you had a representation of, I don't know, two-spirit, transsexual, Eskimo, literature, but that there was a core understanding of certain books meant that you could actually build a culture together. There was something for people to assimilate to. And to be really clear, that's why there's been this hostile attack on dead white men and their literature, is that was actually an attack, not just on those people, though it absolutely is, but it was also an attack on the culture that was attached to them. These activists are not stupid. They understand that if they can strip out those core shared texts, get rid of that canon, they can destroy the culture that is attached to it. And so while you're reading these little excerpts from, I don't know, every single tiny minority community across the United States that have no connection to each other, no through line, no connection to the history of the actual United States, you end up in this situation where no one can speak a common language because, again, we are narrative creatures and we embody archetypes. You are not just yourself. You're not just this, completely autonomous, irrational individual making your personality up as you go. You are actually a nested set of archetypes, things you have absorbed, ways of being, patterns of behavior, stories that you have learned. And those things are things that you inhabit. When something happens to you and you know you're supposed to be sad, or you know you're supposed to be angry, or you know you're supposed to be compassionate, the things that you do in response are not just natural patterns of behavior for you, though sometimes they are. They're also patterns that you recognize from the stories that you have absorbed. And so it matters if you share the same stories, because then when you're communicating with other people, they recognize your behavior as acting out an archetype. And they don't say that out loud. They're not like, well, right now he's being Moses. And oh, well, right now he's being Ishmael. Well, right now he's being whatever character. They don't always say that specifically. But oftentimes they understand it because they are familiar with the paint that is being placed on the canvas. They are familiar enough. There's enough shared substrate for them to grasp what you are communicating, even if it's not being perfectly communicated through the exact words that you are putting out there. And this is absolutely critical, because without this, not only can you not learn other works from the canon, but it becomes very difficult to just communicate as human beings. Again, when I was working as a teacher, I noticed how desperate these students were to try to connect with each other, but none of them had the shared language necessary. And so what happens is they all fall back on incredibly crude versions of this. This is why we have this horrific Marvel Star Warsification of our culture, where people can only make references and allusions to movies from the last 15 years, just complete Disney slop that is coming out. Look, there's nothing wrong with watching movies. I liked the original Star Wars movies. I liked some of the original Marvel movies when they came out. But they shouldn't be the core way that you talk to each other in every situation. When you reach for a common understanding, when you're trying to make a reference that will communicate the meaning and purpose and depth of a certain situation to others, you don't want to allude to, I don't know, like whatever garbage Skywalker movie came out 3 years ago. You want to be able to reach for something rich and impactful, something that shows the depth of the human experience, that has stood the test of time and echoes through history. That's far more critical than, you know, just referencing whatever slop has come down from on high in the movie production, pipeline. It's really horrific. And I saw this most when, one of the things that would happen is kids would play these games, these quiz games, to make sure that they are going to do well on the test, give them something fun to do. And when they would do that, every once in a while, you'd be like, okay, well, here's the one on American history. Here's the one on the Constitution. All right, we'll throw in a fun one. What do you want to do? And invariably, they all wanted to do advertisements. They all wanted to do logos, because that was the one shared thing they all had. Some of them might have been from Haiti. Some of them might have been from Guatemala. Some of them might have been from Alabama. Some of them might have been from Florida. But the one thing they all shared is they could recognize Taco Bell and Starbucks and Pepsi logos. And it's incredibly depressing. It really is. But that really was like the most shared culture they had. You couldn't have flashed, you know, pictures of biblical stories up there. You couldn't have made allusions to, you know, other things that would have been, you know, key to different parts of the Iliad or the Odyssey or anything. They wouldn't have been able to get any of that. None of that would have made sense to them. In fact, in some cases, I actually did try that. I tried some of those quizzes. And most of them just had no idea what I was talking about. At one point, I actually had a kid ask me what the word moral meant. I want you to understand, I wasn't teaching an 8-year-old or a 5-year-old. I was teaching someone who was soon going to be an adult. And they didn't know what those words meant, because they just were unfamiliar with any of this stuff. They have no culture. They have no through line. The canon is completely dead to them. It doesn't make any sense. And so they end up with this slop. And the problem when you end up in this scenario is you have a complete just cultural break from the past. You end, and again, this was the purpose. This is not an accident. You know, we're not at the scene of a complete accident. We're at a crime scene. The people who pushed the destruction of the education system had this goal in mind, right? The abolition of the oppressive white patriarchal Western system. That was the goal. That was the explicit goal. And they've done it. They've broken, in many cases, the shared culture that's necessary to go ahead and communicate your values from one generation to the next. And this is really important, because when you have that complete cultural break, you're in a situation where kids can really be completely programmed into anything, because they have no base. There's no truth. There's no there's no time-tested tradition that's backing up any of their understanding. And again, it's not just about learning the morals or memorizing the Ten Commandments or something. It's about the fact that when you don't have stories that you share that are time-tested and feature archetypes that echo through history, you don't have a definition of your role in the world. What does a man look like? What does a woman look like? What does a healthy marriage look like? What does having children look like? What does it mean to be a father, a mother? What does it mean to be a good son or daughter? How should I contribute to my community? What does a meaningful life look like? What's an ethical way to earn money? How should I contribute to my society once I have some of that money? These are all things that you completely don't understand, because you don't have any moral ground. Oh, I shouldn't act like Ebenezer Scrooge. Dickens is showing me what a healthy person looks like after Scrooge goes through this shift, right? Those are things that matter. They help people understand the world about them and how they should fit into it. And when you don't have that, when your country just becomes this complete, you know, disembodied economic zone with no real way to understand each other, you end up in a very dangerous scenario. And it becomes very hard to build again, because the canon, again, has to be alive. It has to be something that we're tied together on a regular basis. And if you have that break, then there's no way to create that cultural continuity. Deconstruction has become really our only connection to the canon at this point, right? Nobody can just put on a Shakespeare production. I went to London with my wife a couple of years ago, and we wanted to go to the Globe Theater to watch Shakespeare, because it's the Globe Theater and Shakespeare, and it's a huge part of history. But you can't go to the Globe Theater and just watch a Shakespeare production anymore. They're all the radically woke deconstructions and reconstructions of Shakespeare. They won't just, Shakespeare is boring, right? Everybody knows it, except actually no one knows it anymore. That's the problem. But everyone assumes that it's boring. Everybody assumes it's passé. It's already been done 1,000 times, because they've lost the importance of tradition and iterating on things over and over and over again. Yes, the stories of the Bible have been told 1,000 times. Yes, the stories of Shakespeare have been told 1,000 times. The plays have been performed. You know what? You need to perform them 1,000 more. You need to tell them 1,000 more. You do that for a reason. It's not all about novelty. It's not all about being entertained. It's about carrying on something that's true and powerful and meaningful. But you can't do that anymore because no one who actually performs Shakespeare would actually want to be caught dead performing real Shakespeare. They all want to be deconstructing it. That's what makes them look clever. That's what makes them look current. That's what makes them look progressive. And so it's impossible anymore to connect to that tradition. The only place you can find a Shakespeare play that's actually being done is like maybe a high school. And even then, it's only maybe. Most of them feel like Shakespeare is too much of a dead white guy to even put on his plays. And so it's impossible to even capture that anymore. You got to go watch, I don't know, like a 1950s Marlon Brando rendition of Julius Caesar to actually watch that play be performed at this point. And so it's a very dangerous scenario to be in because you don't have a way to make cultural traction. And that really is where we're at this point, right? We it's not just that we are in danger of losing the canon. It's not just like, oh, well, you know, if we don't safeguard it for this generation, it might be gone in the next generation. No, we didn't safeguard it for several generations, and now it really is gone. Like, the text is there. You can still go back and read the canon most of the time, but it's not a living connection for most people. If you go to a library in many places, they've cleaned out most of these books. I mean, don't get me wrong, you could still check out the works of Shakespeare and probably, you know, check out some Dickens and something in most of these libraries. But if you go in, 95% of the slop everywhere is just whatever new novel thing is coming out. And I want to be clear here. There's nothing wrong with new books. Like I said, you have to have a living tradition. There are going to be things that are written that are incredibly valuable and will be added to the canon. And by the way, there's also just a place for, you know, some level of junk food. Look, I think like 40K lore is really fun, right? I think that Warhammer 40K writes a lot of really interesting stuff. Now, they do make allusions to a lot of things that are part of the canon. So there's still some value there. It's not a complete break, but I mean, it is just junk food at the end of the day. And I'm not saying you can't ever eat McDonald's, but I am saying if 95% of what you eat is McDonald's, you're going to end up with a problem. And that's really what we've done with our libraries and things. It's very difficult for people to connect with this. And even if they do go out of their way to read old books, it's increasingly hard for them to find people to talk to, people who would be aware of the references that they're making. Increasingly, if you talk about old things, if you talk about things that are connected to the canon, it's not a way for you to bond with people like it used to be. It's not a shared language that you had. Instead, it's something that alienates you. Oh, that guy's read a bunch of old books, I guess. I mean, I don't know anything he's talking about. I mean, you know, have you seen the football game? What about the latest Taylor Swift song? Did you see the last Marvel movie? Here are the three fast food restaurants I went to in the last week. These are the things that people actually use to share experiences at this point. You making references to Dante or the Iliad is going to go over the head of the vast majority of people, and that's a real tragedy. Now, what can we do about this, right? I don't want to just be doom and gloom about this. Well, one thing we have to recognize is the importance of rescuing the canon. We have to read it. Now, to be clear, I have not read every book in the Western canon. I'm not even close. In fact, this is something that's a deficit of mine. I'm familiar, of course, with many of these things. I've read the Divine Comedy. I've read the Bible, of course, Chaucer. A lot of this stuff, Dickens, but yeah, I haven't read all of it. I've never quite made it through Paradise Lost, you know, some of these things. And so I'm not saying everybody has to read every one of these books. I'm not saying it's a personal failing of yours if you don't, but you need to make a concerted effort to go and read old books, get back into the canon, take the time, listen to the Iliad and Odyssey as an audiobook, man. It was written as a poem. It's meant to be said out loud. So just do it that way. Take the time to go back and mix in a lot of these classics. Importantly, if you're involved in educating people, if you're involved, if you're raising children, make sure that's part of their life. Make sure that you could read Livy's Lives to your children. You can read the different adventures of classic heroes. You should, of course, be reading the Bible. These are all things that you can put into as your children's lives as part of their culture. maybe it won't be in their wider reference when it comes to, I don't know, something that's on TV, but at least it will be something that was a core foundation of theirs growing up. When I was a kid, my mom got me a lot of those condensed classic novels for kids, right? And I didn't go back and read the adult version of every one of them, but I did read a lot of them when I was a kid. So I was already familiar with Moby Dick references and Treasure Island and the Three Musketeers and the Man in the Iron Mask and, you know, just the Tom Sawyer, you know, Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court. I knew all of these books well before I read the full book or, you know, had an understanding of their deeper context. But because I knew the basic story later on when I read Moby Dick, you know, when I got older, I grasped a lot more of it than my, you know, than my classmates, because I already knew the details. I already knew a lot of the general, you know, where the story was going. These things matter, and you can take, you can take part in this. Also, start reading clubs. Start getting together with people who care about this. And by the way, this is a great way to, one, basket weave, and two, take care of you know, something that's critical and make it right wing. And I'm not saying go out of your way to be explicitly right wing. You won't need to be, because if you're just focusing on the classics, if you're reading the classics, most of the people who are interested in that at this point probably are a little right wing anyway, or at least they're probably walking away from progressivism. If they wanted to be progressive, they would never be reading all these dead white men. So this is what I talk about when I talk about creating social institutions that are implicitly right wing, but are not explicitly political. You need to make these connections that are not political, but are cultural, and will draw you together with people who will share your politics inevitably, but that's not the core of what you do. And that also protects your organizations from, you know, things like the government that might want to attack right-wing organizations, because the core of your reading group is Shakespeare or, you know, Tolstoy or, you know, Dickens or something. It's not something that's easily, you know, prosecutable. It's not going to have them searching, you know, through your emails or your DMs on a regular basis. These are things that you can do that build culture, that draw like-minded people together, that further your traditions, and also set you up to be culturally influential, because you're going to have access to a depth of rich culture that other people simply don't have, and that's going to stand out. Yeah, it might not help you at your current corporate job, but at some point, we're going to see a revival of right-wing or conservative or, you know, neo-traditional, I guess, whatever, however you want to say this. We're going to see a resurgence of this cultural force. It's already occurring. The left are completely culturally bankrupt. They can't make anything interesting. Everything the left is making is completely gross and tired. It has all the excitement of an after-school special in the 80s, okay? And that doesn't mean that the right is making great art at the moment. They're not. I mean, there are some examples, but it's still very mired in kind of production values and other issues at the moment. However, it's increasingly just better than anything that the left is putting out. I mean, I'll say this, you know, The Chosen, it, you know, not all of its production values are going to blow you away. Sometimes not even all of its writing is going to blow you away. But just the fact that it's like telling it's an interesting way to tell biblical stories actually does set it apart and make it better than a lot of what's on streaming services today. And that's one of the reasons that it is a success. And I think you're going to see more and more of this, and it's going to be more interesting. It's not just going to be, you know, direct iterations on Bible stories, though it will make allusions to those things. Of course, it has to in order to be referencing the Western canon. But I think if you are involved in these groups, you will be the kind of people who will be drawn upon to do this kind of stuff. You'll be inspired to make these kinds of things. So I think there is important work to be done. We can shelter these works. We can nurture this culture. We can cultivate and bring back, and not just bring, you know, but revivify. We're not just returning to reading Shakespeare or something like that, but we're returning to a place where we have immersed ourselves deeply enough in the canon to once again have a rich ground from which to draw and create things. One of the reasons the left is so bankrupt is they're just deconstructing the last little bits, picking the last little bits of meat off the bones of Western civilization. They can't make good culture anymore because there's nothing left for them to draw on. They've deconstructed and destroyed all of it. But you can have that. They don't want it. They've discarded all of it. They've made it forbidden to look at what the white men wrote, right? They've made it culturally toxic to be familiar even with the works of these dead white men. But you can be countercultural just by investing in that culture, just by looking back into the past and saying, these are the deep, rich cultural works that inform my ancestors, that were created by my ancestors and informed everything that I grew up with, and they will inform what my children grow up with. And that's how you change things. Now, I'm not saying everything is bottom up. You know that I'm an elite theory guy. So I'm not just saying, oh, well, if every one of us does this, though, to be clear, every one of us should do this. But it's not just about every one of us, doing this by ourselves alone or, from the bottom up. But if we create a scenario where we are training the next generation to be familiar with this and have this aspect to themselves, this culture that no one else has, then you will be de facto training elites because they'll be superior to the people around them. They just will be. If everyone else is going to public school and getting this complete garbage trash culture, and the only thing they can reference is like Taco Bell and whatever Marvel movie came out 3 weeks ago, and that's the only culture that they have any attachment to, and your kids are people who are well-read and well-versed in the classics and have a deep connection to their tradition and to God, they are spiritually and mentally healthy, they are going to stand out. They are going to overperform. And at some point, the entire point of our society won't be just to mow those people down. That we will need these people to rescue us from what society has become. And so it's critical that you create the culture now, that you inculcate the virtue now, that you create that deep and important well that your next generation can immerse themselves in, so that when they rise up and take their place as those who influence the culture and build great things, they will have the necessary connection to the past. They will have the connection to that wellspring of deep thought and deep emotion and true culture that will allow them to make a meaningful connections, to have a powerful influence, and to build great things. And so that's why it's absolutely critical that we reconnect to the Western canon. Again, everybody doesn't need to start memorizing every line of the Iliad. I get it. We're not all going to get to the same place. We're not all going to spend our time on every one of these things. I understand. But we can all make an effort, and we can all make an effort to grow ourselves in this way, become more connected to this, and most importantly, pass that on to the next generation. Because that's going to be key. We can't talk about saving the West if we don't even know what the West is. And the foundation of who we are is in our shared stories and understandings. You need the Bible. You need the Inferno. You need Paradiso. You need to have Dickens. You need to have Shakespeare. You need to have DeMasi. You need to have these references at hand. You need to have the knowledge that weaves these things together. So that's why I think it's really critical that we start paying attention to the canon. I think it's really critical that we start focusing on this, because if we don't do it, then we simply won't have the tools and we won't know what's worth saving at the end of the day. All right, guys, let's go ahead and take a look over at the questions of the people here real quick. Let me grab a drink of water before we do. All right, Creeper Weirdo says, I too am a son of God, or was once. John Milton has written more in one sentence than Stephen King has written in his whole career. You know, one of the things that I definitely learned over time is the importance of rereading and meditating. Obviously, in many cases, you read something through the first time, and it's just about getting down the idea, the basic outline, the sketch, the stories. But more and more, I find myself realizing that rather than reading another 10 books just to say I read them, I should probably reread slowly and meditate on and take notes on some of the things I've already read so that I have a deeper grasp of them. And you're right, Creeper Rito. This is one of the things that really makes us stop and understand important things is the depth that is inside many of these stories, the layers of meaning that are wrapped in many of these classic works. And that's, again, what makes them so valuable. They're not, you know, I mean, I like some Stephen King novels. You know, it's not that there's nothing of value there. But the fact that there is layer upon layer upon layer, that every time you read Shakespeare, every time you read the Bible, every time you read many of these works, there's something else hiding behind it, is what gives it that rich depth. Because again, when we talk to each other, we talk in this too, right? We make allusions to stories. And even if we don't understand, we can't explicitly point out like the 13 things that are inside the story. We still understand part of that when we talk to someone about them. We're communicating that even when we don't realize it. And that's really important. Tiny Stupid Demon says, dismiss everything else he says, but Dugan is right when he says that all government employees should be required to pass the test on Plato, even traffic cops. Like a lot of people know, may know, I do find the works of Alexander Dugan interesting. They do help me think about things, even though I think overall he's a guy with a political project that hates me. So don't just read Dugan, you know, with your eyes closed. Make sure you have large grains of salt attached anytime you do. But yeah, he's right that that work is fundamental in many ways. So many of the ideas and notions, you know, I've said this before, but I think it illustrates this perfectly. For the first time I read Aristotle, I was not impressed. I was like, Aristotle. Okay. What's the big deal with this guy? He just says a lot of things that are obvious. And what I didn't realize is that the things he was saying were obvious because they were woven into everything that I understood. They had so thoroughly informed the culture I was a part of that I felt like they were, oh, okay, well, yeah, of course everyone knows this. And of course, even I didn't understand enough of it. I need to go back and there's many layers of Aristotle beyond what I had culturally absorbed. But most of it seemed obvious because actually it was what had informed everything that I knew. And that is so often the case. And that's why, you know, having a basic understanding of many of these works is so clear, because then you understand where the beliefs and the attitudes and the archetypes that you're acting out and hold came from. And that really gives you, that just makes you a more well-rounded person in a very critical way. Creeper Rito says, but Orin, Lovecraft was racist. In the Inferno, a man is in hell for being gay. His name isn't Slave Jim in the book, and I can't criticize C.S. Lewis for anything right now, but he's a Christian, so I'll find something. Yeah, of course, these are all the problems, right? This is all the things that he's referencing there are reasons we're not allowed to read these things. We're not allowed to appreciate them. They have to be stricken from the record because ultimately it's the same reason we have to disappear all of the founding fathers, because they were all racist slaveholders or whatever at the end of the day. Look, you just have to not care. You have to push past this. You have to go ahead and say, I am going to learn about this. I am going to inhabit this. I'm going to meditate on this. And, you know, and again, you'll be at an advantage because you'll be absorbing critical things that no one else is, because they have bought into this propaganda that they need to leave the Western canon by the wayside. Tiny Stupid Demon says, finished your book, was awesome. Room got dusty at tree planting part in the last chapter. Otherwise, needs more Plato. Sorry, on a Plato binge lately. Well, thank you, man. I'm really glad that you enjoyed the book. Thank you for buying it and reading it. Obviously, I'm making references to Plato in there. And of course, Plato does warn about democracy in his work. So it definitely, you could definitely use a lot of Plato there. I did use a lot more contemporary, or I shouldn't say contemporary thinkers, but I used thinkers from the last couple of centuries, as opposed to going all the way back to the ancients, because I feel like there are a lot of people who go back to the ancients, and it's fine work. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Patrick Deneen did this, in several of his books, and they're great. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but it's just, it was just ground that was well trod. So I went ahead and tried to keep things a little more contemporary when I was going through there. But thank you very much, man. Let's see. Cooper Weirdo says, well, what if Joan of Arc was trans, though? Yes, all of your heroes must be destroyed. Creepy Weird also says, are you saying that you don't like Velma, Oren? I heard how terrible that is, but I don't have any other reference point for it. Like, I know they did this horribly woke Scooby-Doo, but I really don't know anything about it. Thankfully, oftentimes today, I'm very glad to just not know about the current controversy. I'm watching the Fallout series right now. I feel like it's not as bad as people made it out to be. It's not great. The plot is just paper thin. It really is something that's just for the fans. It's a lot of fan service, but I am a huge fan of Fallout. Is probably my favorite game of all time. And so I recognize everything and I love it. It's not as woke as people make it out to be. Don't get me wrong. It's woke. But the main character being a woman is not as terrible as people make it out to be, because she's not perfect. She's actually like a real person. She's naive. She makes mistakes. She has to learn. She's often hurt or almost killed on a regular basis. She's not better at everything than everybody else. She's just a real person, which, you know, I'm only halfway through, so maybe it gets much worse. But in general, I don't know all of the new shows. That's one of the few updated ones I'm familiar with. Glow in the Dark says the antithesis of the deconstructionist is the revivalist, but building is always harder than destroying, so it takes time. That's absolutely true. A lot of people don't want to do it because it's harder. Also, a lot of people can't do it because, again, they've been told that they must distance themselves. They're not willing to engage with a lot of things that would allow them to revive this stuff, because you know, it's all evil. It's all racist. It's all, you know, from this terrible past. And so they simply don't have the material to revive. And that's what I'm saying is I think it's important for us to go back and do this, because that will give you a distinct advantage. You will simply have connections and a depth to culture that other people don't have. And it will give you a distinct advantage in pretty much every way. Robert Winesfield here with just a super chat donation. Thank you very much, man. Really appreciate that. And let's see. Glow in the Dark says, have you ever read anything about the Sophists? Kind of encouraging, because it seems history does rhyme. Sophists of Plato's time were the experts of their time, or so sources say. Yes, I mean, obviously, you know, the idea that they would just speak to sound important, as a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. It is very clear that there's a lot of connection to what's happening today, and the fact that the experts of our time are losing their sway in a very similar manner is certainly a good thing. The fact that rhetoric, empty rhetoric itself, seems to be losing some of its power is really critical. Something, like you said, you'd expect. It's a bit of a cyclical thing, but definitely an encouraging development, to be sure. All right, guys, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming by. Once again, of course, if you'd like to buy my new book, The Total State, just came out this week, you can do that on Amazon. And if you decide to do that, guys, go ahead and leave a rating and a review on that. It really helps with the book and everything. Of course, you could also get the book at local bookstores. You can get it at big box bookstores. It's everywhere. It's got a major distributor, major publisher. So you should be able to get it most places that you want to buy books. And I really appreciate that. Of course, if it's your first time on the channel, make sure you go ahead and subscribe, turn on the bell and the notification, everything, so you can catch these streams when they go live. If you'd like to go ahead and make sure that you can get these broadcasts as podcasts, make sure you subscribe to the Oren McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast platforms. And when you do, leave those ratings and reviews. Again, the algorithm, it's always there. All right, guys, thank you once again for coming by. And as always, I will talk to you next time.